Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome to the show former FBI agent Jim Davidson. He and I have a lot in common. My uncle served in the FBI for, I think, 23 years. Indeed, most of my family are cops. I'm the oddball. I joined in the Army and served for 22 years. Jim and I both put our lives on the line to protect our nation for over two decades. Listeners know that while I don't call law enforcement officers our brothers and sisters in arms, I do call them our first cousins in valor because they put their lives on the line every day. Well, Jim is now the president of Protect the FBI. Their mission is to protect the FBI from politics. Why do I like that? Welcome aboard, Jim.
Good morning, Colonel. Good to talk to you again. Nice to be on.
Hey, glad to have you. Jim, tell us about your time in the FBI. When and why did you join? What did you do?
Well, it kind of goes back to a time period I'd gotten out of school. I went to school in D.C., and as a kid, I always wanted to be an astronaut, believe it or not. And I guess at some point realized I just didn't have, kind of the aptitude in calculus and physics. And, I was going to school in D.C., and some family came in town, and we went and took a tour of the FBI building. And then, several years later, I was working for, I had an accounting background. It was a CPA by this time, and I was working in the World Trade Center, and believe it or not. And so in some ways, I guess I'd gotten into the FBI and transferred to L.A., and in some ways, it saved my life in a sense. I might still have been working in the World Trade Center, but somehow I got a lead. I was working for a company that was doing something that was going to involve asking the FBI to come and speak and maybe do some recruiting at a job fair. And I ended up talking to the recruiter for about an hour, and I couldn't sell him on what we were doing, but, he said, why don't you give me 5 minutes to sell you on what we're doing, because we really need people with your background, and, we just had a terrific conversation, and he ended up sending me an application, and I applied, and a little over a year later, I was at the FBI Academy. A lot happened in that year. Once I decided that this was a fantastic career and I wanted to do it, then it was torture waiting to find out whether I, passed all the fit tests and the aptitude tests and the interviews and all that. But that's kind of how it happened for me. You don't often get to see. FBI is not exactly the type of agency that comes out and recruits you the way the CIA might. But in this sense, I was recruited or asked to apply, and I did, and then spent some time in South Texas and 4 years there, and then the rest of my career in L.A. with quite a bit of time overseas and some time at headquarters.
Okay. So you have had what I'm guessing is a somewhat typical FBI career. Some work in the United States, a little bit overseas, that kind of thing?
It's pretty typical, yeah. I spent the early part of my career doing some white-collar crimes and narcotics, and then came to L.A., and I was assigned to work with DEA and actually had a desk in their office and spent 2 years there and learned, I'll tell you, those 2 years, probably learned more in 2 years working with a couple of DEA agents and one L.A. County Sheriff's Detective, just writing Title Threes and, going up against narcotics traffickers and drug kingpins, we used to call them at the time, and kind of brought those skills over to our violent crime squad, where I worked a lot of kidnapping cases, a lot of parental abductions, but then also the traditional types of kidnapping for ransoms. And within a year over there, we had a major, it was my major case of my career. This is back in 2001, just after 9/11. Of course, we're all busy for the first several months after 9/11, the entire FBI was, but things started to, obviously, as time moves on, agents go back to their traditional work, while a core group, obviously, in different parts of the country, focused on 9/11 for a long time. I went back to my traditional work of investigating violent crime, and we had this major kidnapping, a Russian organized kidnapping ring. They kidnapped five people in L.A. between November 2001 and January 2002, and we solved it. Unfortunately, we did not rescue the initial victims. They were ultimately held for ransom and then killed, and their bodies were dumped in a reservoir in Northern California. But we unraveled it, solved a few homicides overseas, and that was my career case. But in terms of your original question, was this a typical career? Yeah, it was pretty typical. I got to spend some time in Ukraine and some time in Israel, but they were temporary assignments. And then I spent a year at our inspection division, and then I also supervised a surveillance squad for the latter part of my career. And yeah, that was it. I saved lives, proud of the work that I did, made some terrific friends, and the next chapter of my life is starting with Protect the FBI and the work that we're doing here to try to ensure that, on the one hand, the FBI is not used for partisan purposes, but on the other hand, it has to be subject to rigorous, meaningful, but bipartisan oversight. And that's one of the things that we think is lacking these days.
Wow. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing our FBI with Jim Davidson, the president of Protect the FBI. Jim, I really appreciate your background. It certainly fits. My uncle was an FBI agent. He retired about 1960, and I was just a kid when he told stories, so I don't know that I can sort through all of those. But one of the things that I have come away with, despite all the stupid things that have happened, at least what the FBI has been blamed for recently, is that leaders can often do dumb things, but I cannot believe that the rank and file of the FBI is not the same good people that I knew through my uncle, that I've known off and on different things.
They're terrific, and I can even speak highly of the leadership in the FBI right now. The head of the LA office was Dave Bowditch. He's now the number two guy. The number three guy is Paul Abate. And these are good guys that, you know, they want to do the right thing. They're under tremendous and intense pressure right now. And I know the FBI is, you know, going to take a hard look at itself and see, you know, what it can do differently. We don't have, as an organization, we don't have an opinion. We don't really place blame or fault. We're nonpartisan. We're forward-looking. But the FBI always needs to take a hard look at itself. And, you know, I blog quite a bit, and I had a blog from a few weeks ago that just talked about organizational hubris at the FBI. Is it perception or reality? And I make the argument that some of the mistakes that the FBI has made in the past, and certainly the mistakes that it will make in the future, are tied to a series of policies that go all the way back to the Civil Service and Reform Act of 1978, and it's permitted the FBI to develop a somewhat insular culture. So there's some bad policy that needs to be changed. You know, policy and culture are very closely tied together, so the culture is not, it's a really difficult thing to explain. It's a great company, you know, it's a great job, it's a great organization. And people genuinely like each other and get along, but there are some cultural issues that prevent the rank and file from speaking up and from having the protections that they need. And quite frankly, what the public wants, whether they know it or not, what they need, what they should require. Is that the federal government workforce remain a civil, not a political service. And in order for it to be a civil service dedicated to the interests of the American people, not the politicians that are their bosses, they need to be able to have the right protections, stronger whistleblowing protections, and they need the type of protections that create an environment in which they can speak up if they see an abuse of authority or mismanagement. And they need, you know, the internal personnel and disciplinary systems that are fair and provide an avenue for appellate relief that's outside the agency itself, and all the things that I say that the FBI needs that don't exist in the FBI today. And so. Until you change some of these policies, the culture is not going to—it's not going to get any better. But it's difficult because it's a tremendous organization, and it does a lot of good. So you know, it's not as if it's falling apart on the inside. It hasn't. Obviously, the principles are there. You know, the basic tenet that no man is above the law is—it's all. You know, the ethos is still there, but, you know, as an organization, our belief is that these things are not going to change from the inside. It doesn't matter how much executive management wants to change things. They will not be. It's going to take outside pressure and Congress to do it.
Amen, brother. So what you're telling me, Jim, is that there's a lot of good people there, but they aren't perfect. And even good people make mistakes sometimes. And we've got a good organization, and we're going to continue this conversation. Jim's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. Then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Jim Davidson, the president of Protect the FBI, about abuse of our FBI. Jim, some of the things you have described are a little bit similar to an issue that I dealt with earlier this year, and that's the VA. One of their big problems was there was literally no protection for whistleblowers. So when something bad happened, whether it was because an inappropriate person or manipulative or whatever, there was no place to go. That's been fixed. Well, nothing's fixed in a short period of time, but at least the fix is in because some of the things you described the FBI needs, they got. Now, they had some other issues, too, that we don't need to go there. But am I right in assuming that what we need here, what you need here, what our nation needs here, is a way to help the FBI self-police itself as well as have an outside agency that can be turned to? Am I right?
Yeah, and let me let me just really quick with that, kind of boring your listeners, there's and going into the details. There was a Whistleblowing Enhancement Act in 2016, and it had every provision that would be necessary to make the law, it was a bill, to make the resulting law robust, minimize the delays. There's lengthy delays in the system. It could take 10 years to go through the process. And what I'm talking about is if you're retaliated against for making a protected disclosure is a report of an abuse of authority or the gross mismanagement or a violation of law. And if you're retaliated against, it usually happens through the disciplinary system, you know, just to challenge that and say, look, I was demoted or I was reassigned or I was fired or whatever. The delays to even air that out, it's years. And the other thing that the bill would have done, the law, had it been signed, was it would have assured that FBI employees have opportunities for a fair and independent hearing, including the ability to seek relief from the courts. Anyway, none of that passed. One small provision that did relatively nothing passed, and there was some very passionate testimony by these are changes that the Inspector General in the DOJ wanted as well. Private organizations, the National Whistleblowing Association, all these organizations, they wanted these changes. The FBI was able to persuade a lot of influence in Congress, and it should be the other way around. You know, Congress has done just a horrible job at holding the FBI accountable, and again, they must do it on a bipartisan basis, and you know, that's why we're here.
Well, it is.
Pledge. Yeah.
And we the people, our country needs a wonderful FBI. And all the right parts are there. And I'm not saying that you don't have some jerks. Every group has some jerks. I'm not saying that there aren't occasionally leaders at different levels that abuse power. But the general statement is the right people are there. They're properly motivated. They want to serve. And whistleblower protection is something that I've
sure. And
then
you look at it from this perspective, Colonel. Our purpose is to safeguard the FBI from partisan politics. So, that's why if there's an abuse of authority, there's a million types of abuses of authority. They're not all necessarily, I'm not suggesting that there are any politically related ones. But again, we don't have an opinion on the past 3 years. And, it's an argument that's never going to be resolved anyway. But all you really need to do is look back as far as Watergate and L. Patrick Gray to see that the FBI can be politicized. And we think that its policy and its culture has created an environment in which it can happen. And so our organization simply wants to address a variety of things. We want Congress to work together. We want, make these changes that we're talking about. And this is why the public, both on the right and the left, should be in. If you believe that the FBI was politicized in the last 3 years, or if you believe that it can be from the Trump administration, and whatever your beliefs are, we are here to positively affect and cause some change that will, I use the word mitigate a lot, it's my favorite word, I think, but mitigate the chance of the FBI being used for partisan purposes.
Noble and worthy goal. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom, and we're talking about our FBI with Jim Davidson. Jim, your goals seem to be so clearly something America needs. There may be other agencies that need them too. We're talking FBI right now. We need our FBI. One of the things that I guess all listeners can do is communicate with their Congress critters, congressmen and senators, and ask them, how come this didn't pass? What's keeping it from passing now? Is that a reasonable activity? Let's look for a call to action for our listeners.
Sure, I'm sorry, and I appreciate that because I always forget to give a call to action. I spent a career in public service, not not as the head of a social welfare organization, so I always forget to tell people, but please go to our website, protectthefbi.org. We are, in fact, we're using a firm in Grand Rapids to help us with our SEO, because we're not yet ranking on Google. But so you have to actually type that in, protectthefbi.org. And there's a number of things you can do on the site. Read our policy papers. Just read what we're doing. Sign up for our newsletter. If you can, it's even unusual for me to ask for money, but we need money to push our cause, to be able to lobby Congress. So donate if you can. And we just really want to get our email list going. And there's a petition that you can sign regarding the whistleblowing legislation. There's a number of different things you can do out there. You can reach out to me through the info@protectthefbi.org. I get back to everyone. We take suggestions. I want to hear what your listeners have to say. But help us get the word out. This is important behind-the-scenes work. This is the fabric of the organization itself, and we would rather not be looking back, 10 years from now and saying, this is what we should have done. I spent some time in Ukraine. I spent a year there as an FBI agent. I watched as one of the political parties infiltrated the intelligence agency, and the other one was trying to infiltrate the police. And we are not Ukraine. I can assure your listeners of that. I'm not going to yell fire in a crowded room. But it's these things happen just a little bit. Our standards move just a little bit at a time, and there are some holes to be plugged.
And folks, this is our country. It's our responsibility. Jim can raise these issues, but we have to take action. ProtectTheFBI.org. Take a look at some of what they've written. If you write a letter or an email to your congressman, congresswoman, and your senators, and do it once a month, that will make an impact. We can do this, and it's our country, and it's our FBI. It's not Jim's, it's ours, and we need it. Jim, final comment?
Yeah, Colonel, that's exactly the point. It is the country's FBI, and we're here to protect the organization. Not the people in it. We're protecting the institution for the American people and to ensure that it functions the way it should.
Well, Jim, that hits the nail right on the head. And that's why I'm delighted that you were able to join us today. Jim, thank you.
Colonel,
for taking time to
join
us today. Thank you for your service to our nation and the FBI. Thank you for what you are doing now. It's an honor to call you a friend. I look forward to staying in touch with you. God bless you.
You too. Thank you.